Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. As an intelligence-driven and threat-focused national security organization with both intelligence and law enforcement responsibility, the mission of the FBI is to protect and defend the U.S. against terrorist and foreign intelligence threats, to uphold and enforce the criminal laws of this country. The FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division, CJIS, plays an integral role in this effort. CJIS works to reduce terrorist and criminal activities by maximizing the ability to provide timely and relevant criminal justice information. It is the largest division in the FBI. What are the strategic priorities for the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Systems Division? How is the FBI's CJIS division fostering information sharing across the law enforcement enterprise? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Stephen Morris, Assistant Director of the Criminal Justice Information Systems Division, CJIS, within the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Chris Traynor. So, Steve, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here, Mike.
Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Steve, I'd like to kick off our conversation with some context. Would you provide us with a brief overview of the history and mission of the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division?
Sure, absolutely. So, CJIS Division, we have a long history. We're actually in our numbering chart. We're Division One, believe it or not. The FBI, back in the, I think in the 20s, back when it was the Bureau of Investigation, Congress actually passed a law that consolidated at that particular time. There were several fingerprint repositories that existed throughout the country, and Congress passed a law to consolidate those. And that really gave birth to the Identification Division of the or what was then the Bureau of Investigation, later became the FBI. So it goes back to the 20s, the creation of our division. So we're a long-tenured division, but our mission has evolved like anything else in the world evolves over the decades. So we were the Identification Division for many, many decades, doing fingerprints. That was our bread and butter, so to speak. And then back in the 90s, the early 90s, there was at least a conscious effort to move some of our bigger CJIS occupied, or the Identification Division occupied, a lot of real estate in the federal building, in the J. Edgar Hoover building in D.C. And so that when there was a need for more space in there, they were looking for components of the FBI to move out of the Hoover building. And one of those was the Identification Division, because we consumed a lot of space with file cabinets full of fingerprint cards. So to make a long story short, that's what gave birth to the idea or the thought of moving the Identification Division out. Senator Byrd at that time from West Virginia obviously astutely raised his hand, offered up a dedicated, strong workforce in West Virginia and said, we can do it cheaper, better, faster in West Virginia. And so we ended up, the Bureau actually bought about 985 acres out in West Virginia. And in a fairly rapid time, relocated what was then the Identification Division out to West Virginia. And with that move, they also decided to incorporate or throw in some other programs that was going on at the time in the Hoover building. One was we were just starting into this unclassified thing called the Internet. The Bureau was getting into that. We had in its infancy, it used to be called Law Enforcement Online. And so they took that program. Another program you probably heard a little bit about here lately is our Uniform Crime Reporting Program, our UCR as we refer to it. That program was also blended in with the Identification Division, and that's when, and there were a couple of other things, I'm sure I'm missing some of those, but they consolidated those programs and relocated them all in one batch out to West Virginia, and they renamed it the Criminal Justice Information Services Division, because then it became more than just an Identification Division. So that was really the kind of the history of how CEGIS came to be, and more importantly, how we ended up in West Virginia.
Interesting. So, you know, again, for more context, I was wondering if you could give us a sense operationally how the FBI is organized, the scale of operation, and maybe if that's too general, what about your division? What's your budget? How many folks do you have reporting to you? Things like that.
Yeah. So I probably would stick more to what CEGIS is in terms of, because obviously I know that. Obviously, the FBI is a large organization. We're made up of a number of branches, I think 4 or 5 different branches. The CEGIS division is one of 3 divisions located within the FBI's science and technology branch. So our sister divisions within our STB branch, or science and technology branch, our sister divisions are our laboratory division and our operational technologies division. Both of those are located down at Quantico, as you know. So, but as far as CEGIS, we're, like I said earlier, we're the oldest division, but we're also the largest division. I have a little over 2,400, almost 2,500 full-time employees that work at CEGIS. Then you throw in about 400 or 500 contractors that work on site there, as well as another 400 or 500 that support our operations there in and out, on and off campus. So at any given time, you know, or any given week, you know, we've got 3,000 people traversing through there. And we're a 24/7, 365 day a year operation. We never close. Our budget runs about $400 million as far as our discretionary, what we call our discretionary funding. We pump a lot of taxpayer dollars into West Virginia. So as you might imagine, we are great partners in the community there in North Central West Virginia. We're located just about 25, 26 miles south of Morgantown, where the West Virginia University is located. So we have a great partnership with WVU and the other schools in the area. But again, CEGIS is, we're the oldest, the largest as far as personnel-wise. But the funny thing is we, of all the divisions in the FBI, we only have about 25, 26 agents, FBI agents assigned there. I'm obviously one of those as the assistant director. We fondly refer to ourselves, and you can appreciate this, Chris, we refer to ourselves as one percenters. So there's a handful of us there, but it's a great relationship that we have with all the staff that are there. I mean, we have a lot of career IT folks, information technology folks that run our data centers and do things like that. And it really is a perfect marriage because we provide that operational insight to what is going on in the world in terms of investigations and national security stuff. So it's been a great relationship.
Let's talk a little bit more about your specific role as Assistant Director of CEGIS. What are your duties and responsibilities that you carry out?
Well, obviously, you know, our mission at CEGIS from a general standpoint is, you know, our mission is to provide our national security, our law enforcement, our intelligence community partners, that's local, state, federal, tribal partners, is to provide them criminal justice information and systems they need to not only protect the country but also preserve, you know, our civil liberties within the U.S. And that's our overarching mission, so to speak. And to do that on a 24/7 basis, 365 days a year. Really, the division is broken up into 2 branches, if you will. We have the IT side, or the information technology side. That's the branch that does what we consider our kind of our production work there. They manage the data centers, all our information technology that is the backbone for a lot of the services and the things we provide to the 18,000 local law enforcement or state and local law enforcement that use our services, as well as the FBI. So we have the IT side of it. That's kind of the information services side of it. And they also manage and maintain other large, so we have our next generation identification system that is, it replaced the old AFIS or the automated fingerprint identification system. They manage that and keep that running 24/7. We have our National Crime Information Center, NCIC. That's the system that basically law enforcement uses and to check to see if people are wanted. There's persons and people in there. There's 20 some odd files on there from everything from stolen property to wanted fugitives. They maintain that system 24/7, and there's a number of other systems that they maintain on the information side. And then we have kind of what I call the operational branch. And my job as assistant director is to not only make sure that we're doing that, but also to provide that high-level overview to make sure that not only are we providing those services, but we're also doing it in collaboration with each other to make sure we're not duplicating efforts and make sure we're not missing something. And also, too, is one of my primary roles is to liaison with the 18,000 law enforcement agencies that we support every single day. And I do that with, we have an advisory policy board, which is a formal board made up of local chiefs, sheriffs, police executives, and other law enforcement organizations. There's about 35 of them that form a board that meets twice a year. There's a whole process that supports that. I'm on that board. I'm also on what they call the Compact Council, which is a similar forum or board that also helps us manage the civil or the non-law enforcement use of the data that we have at CJIS. And that's for people that are submitting background checks for jobs and employment and positions of trust. We process those. So there's a whole board that helps us manage that. Overall, we operate off of what we call a shared management process. And that is essentially we have hundreds of millions of records at CJIS that sit in a number of databases. But that data and those records, by and large, do not belong to the FBI or the federal government, for that matter. They belong to local, state, police, sheriffs, and government agencies throughout the country. They trust us with that data. They have for decades now. And our job is to make sure that we're managing it and making it accessible to them on a 24-hour basis. In order to do that, we meet and we work very closely with them to make changes and to do the things that they want us to do so that we can share that data nationally and in some cases internationally. Mm-hmm. So I know that's a long answer to what do I do as an AD, but if you might imagine trying to manage all those and make sure we're doing it all.
It's a great segue into, given the breadth, depth, and importance of the role your organization plays, what are your, top three management challenges or top three challenges that you face? And more importantly, have you sought to address those challenges?
Part of our mission is not only making sure that we manage these millions of records in their criminal history records and law enforcement reports and the different things that populate these systems that we use and make sure that folks have access to that need to. We have to strike a balance with privacy in everything we do. There is absolutely nothing that we at CJIS nor the FBI can do to ever make up for violating someone's privacy. So privacy drives every decision we make. Technology is another challenge. We are a technology-reliant division. I mean, and we're only as good as the technology that we're able to deploy and leverage. Sometimes that can be a challenge because within the federal government, as you might imagine, we operate within a budget and oversight and different things like that. And just because technology exists that private citizens use on a daily basis, it may not be something that is appropriate or practical for the FBI to use, either from a cost effectiveness standpoint or just other reasons. So part of that challenge for me is making sure that we're not doing something that is duplicative or wasteful and we're doing something that may already exist or vice versa, help other agencies that are doing something that we may already have available to them. That's part of my responsibility, I feel, to make sure that are we leveraging each other's assets and resources in a responsible way. So in other words, if there's somebody's out trying to build a widget, if I already have that widget I've been using for a long time, then I should be sharing that widget. Or I should be looking to them to say, how did you make your widget better than mine? Because that's what we need to do. So that's one of the things that I think I have an obligation as not just the assistant director, but also as a steward of taxpayer dollars.
Clearly, there are a lot of known challenges at CJIS, but I'm curious a little bit about the unknown challenges, those things that kind of pop up as emergencies of the day. What has surprised you the most about leading your organization?
I think that probably in a general sense, it's just the sheer size of our division. I've been in the FBI a little over 27 years now, and I've run small offices and small squads and units. And most recently, before I reported as the assistant director to CJIS, I was the special agent in charge of our office, our field office in Houston. So as you move up through your management career and your assignments get a little more, a little bigger and larger and sometimes more complex, there's that gradual progression. But even from moving from a relatively large office, field office operation in Houston, walking into a division, and I've been assigned at Sieges before in previous years, so I had some idea of their mission and their size and scope. But until you're that guy, until you're the guy sitting in the bird seat there and you're responsible for managing that division, you really can't appreciate the magnitude of trying to manage 3,000 people on a 24/7 basis, because then you get into not just managing the operations and a workforce of that large, but also I feel responsible for them. I feel responsible for their happiness, their job gratification, literally their feeding and watering.
You know, it's a good entree into sort of, given your background, your last tour was in Houston, now it's with Sieges. Given your career path, what makes an effective leader? And perhaps you can share with us some of the characteristics of effective leader and who's influenced your leadership style.
First and foremost, I would have to say my family at first, going back to how I was raised, right? And then, of course, as you have children and you have your family, that they keep me grounded. They remind me of really who I am as a person, first and foremost. So I think that affects me every single day. And then, of course, when I get in the office and get into my career, there are managers I've worked for in the past that I remember fondly. Some of them I'm still dear friends with. I spent several years down on the southwest border in El Paso back in the 90s, and I had a boss down there who taught me as a young agent and a new supervisor or soon-to-be supervisor, would teach me things about just how to make, how to approach meetings and different things like that. So little things like that you remember. Obviously, I had a squad mate of mine that was a dear friend. And one of the things I've learned is you never want to forget where you came from. You really always want to keep grounded in that and know who you are as a person, because that affects how you treat other people. So I think that's very important to me. I think as a manager, as an executive, you've got to constantly be able to maintain that flexibility and constantly be innovative and forward-thinking. But don't forget, again, where you came from, because there are lessons learned there. You got to kind of walk that tightrope, because I think there are a lot of lessons learned from the past, but at the same time, we got to constantly be moving forward, sometimes at the speed of light. So I think this is an important balancing act.
What are the strategic priorities for the FBI's Sieges Division? We will ask its Assistant Director, Steve Morris, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.